Hello and welcome to Nightcap with Jim. I'm the titular Jim, and tonight we have a new edition of Jim Goes to the Movies with some The Movies Come to Jim, Cops Edition, where we will be reviewing Black and Blue, Line of Duty, Crown Vic, and 21 Bridges. For more content you may enjoy, please check out our Morning Mugabee podcast and our other social media content at Mugabee Players across all the different social media websites. All right, let's get into it. All right, welcome to another edition of Jim Goes to the Movies. I'm super excited about this episode because this is as specific and themed of an episode of Jim Goes to the Movies as I think we're ever going to get. I don't think we're going to get any more themed than this, because the circumstances behind how this podcast came about, this particular episode, are truly mind-blowing and unique, at least to me. I think it's super interesting. So these are all movies that came out either in the theaters or for home release within about a month and a half of each other. They're all cop films. All of the characters share the character trait of either having been, and maybe they're burnt out or just kind of put out to pasture, becoming or are the kind of operator, trigger puller type cop, with their own clearly defined moral codes and boundaries that are unshakable. And each one features them, these main characters, basically having to go on their own against everybody else, even if, you know, the other people are cops, and even if the other people who are cops are technically on the same side, you know. So, like, we have Black and Blue, where we're dealing with corrupt cops trying to kill this rookie. Line of Duty, we have a cop who's been told to stand down, who refuses that order, and will stop at nothing in order to save this young kidnapped girl's life, no matter what the consequences. With Crown Vic, we have, you know, an aged cop who's done his 25 but doesn't want to leave patrol, training this rookie, and, you know, dealing with some cops who are, quite frankly, bonkers. And, you know, some other crazy stuff going on. And then with 21 Bridges, we have, you know, this manhunt for cop killers. And everybody, you know, all these cops who are just so overwhelmed with bloodlust at the loss of their fallen officers, that they are ignoring this detective's commands and orders to, I need these guys alive. I need this guy alive. I want this guy alive. You don't kill this guy. And then every cop is trying to kill that guy. So, the fact that all of these movies came out either in theaters or home release within this small amount of time, they all share the story aspect of taking place within a 24-hour period or less. And all the characters share that trait of being, you know, having to be the action hero, basically, but not really, like, not like Dutch from Predator action hero, but, you know, that that's how other cops will view them, is just like, oh, you're a badass, like, you're a trigger puller, you know. And the fact that they all have conflict with the people who are supposed to be on their side, I mean, that's insane to me. I've never seen this ever in the history of film, where this many movies share so many characteristics with each other. It's insane to me. It's bonkers. Anyway, let me actually talk about one of the movies. Because I know I'm gonna freak out about this set of circumstances again throughout the episode. So let me actually talk about one of the movies now. We begin with Black and Blue, starring Naomi Harris and Tyrese Gibson and Frank Grillo. I really like this movie a lot. You know, it didn't blow up the box office, and critically speaking, nobody is really writing home to mom about it, in the press wise anyway. But for us audience members, I think we, you know, saw its merits, and they are great, and many. You know, the performances are great. Naomi Harris kills it in this movie. I mean, which isn't saying much because she always does a great job. You know what I mean? So like, you know, saying Naomi Harris did another good job is just like, really? Water's still wet? You know what I mean? It's like, it's not like a revelation, you know? It's like, Naomi Harris did another good job? Well, I kind of expected that. It would be more surprising if she did a bad job. You know, Tyrese was really, really, really good, you know? With having to concentrate on these big budget action movies like the Fast and Furious franchise, he hasn't gotten a lot of, you know, characters like this guy in a while, but this is how his career started, with stuff like Baby Boy, you know, and this really grounded human drama stuff. And, to see him do another movie where that's what they're going for from him is so satisfying, you know, because, you know, when actors get into these big budget things, you know, like the MCU or the Fast and Furious franchise, that don't always offer a lot of time for this real, like, human struggle, this human drama, this internal conflict even. Yeah, the MCU and Fast and Furious stuff does that, but they just don't have the time to develop it, because they're doing 10, 15, 20 minute action sequences, and then they're wrapping the story up because they got to get to the next movie, where then whatever happened in this movie will pay off in the next one. But whereas something like this, which is so, you know, just grounded and a little bit more independently made, and produced, you have time to just have, you know, go through some character development. And there's some great scenes that Tyrese does that are just like so intense and just like really just like hit you where you live, you know. And Frank Grillo is always, it's always a pleasure to see him work, whether he's no matter if he's playing a villain or a good guy, you know what I mean? So just all around great cast work. Another thing that connects these movies is how specific the vision of the directors is, like how it's very clear that all four of these filmmakers made exactly the movie that they wanted to make, and that is another thing that's very rare, because so often there's this movie by committee thing that happens. And I don't see any of that. And I don't see any, like, guesswork. Like, I don't see any, we showed up to set today and we didn't really know what we were trying to get. It looks like all of them got it. And this movie especially is one of the, is probably the toughest one on this list, because it deals with a lot of social issues. Namely being, you know, I mean, like, the very first scene of the movie is Naomi Harris's character going out for a run. And she's in a nice neighborhood where her character lives, but these two white cops stop her and start harassing her until they find out that she's a cop. But even when they find out she's a cop, they're still giving her the stink eye, and it's like, what the hell is wrong with you guys? And that's where the name of the movie comes from. Black and Blue is black because she's a black woman, and blue being a cop. And this is something that has started to come up in film and television recently, this thing where people are having to choose between their race and their occupation when it comes to being a police officer. You know, you're either black or you're blue. You can't be both. And one scene that really exemplifies this was back in Straight Outta Compton, when the guys are recording the album and they go outside to see what's going on with Dr. Dre after his wife his lady leaves him, and these cops come up and start harassing them, and one of them is a black guy, and you know, all of the members of NWA look at this black dude like he's a traitor to their race. And you know, the thing that really sucks about it is that, like, you would think that as time has gone on, that perception would change, but it hasn't. It's only intensified, it seems like, especially with all the stuff that's been going on in the news the past, you know, couple of years, with all these shootings of, you know, of black people, especially unarmed. Excuse me. Unarmed people. And almost exclusively by white cops. You know, so this movie really, really doesn't shy away from calling out, it's not shying away from these issues, is what I'm trying to get at. Which, you know, is a tough thing to do, especially when you're making a movie that about a character who you're supposed to empathize with, who is a cop, you know. When you're saying, like, hey, this stuff is bad, but this stuff is good, when people are so divisive on these issues, but also they're so cut and dry, you know what I mean? And the fact of the matter is that we live in a world that is infinitely more complex than, you know, just black and white or black and blue. To quote the great Jake Peralta, stuff can be more than one thing, you know? And that's what I like about this movie, because that's kind of what it's trying to get to, is trying to get to a place where this character doesn't have to be perceived as just a black woman or just a badge. She can be both, you know? And it does it over this really intense story where a bunch of other cops are trying to kill her. So, you know, it's explosive, it's intense, it's dramatic as all hell. And it's one of, I think, one of the best and most poignant cop films made in the last few years, you know. Just super well done and well made, you know. I can't wait, though, for someone to do another, like, End of Watch kind of movie where, because even End of Watch, which, like, is, like, the most realistic cop movie out there, like, it still has that craziness of, you know, of these two guys getting targeted by a cartel, and, you know, in this one, it's, you know, corrupt cops, you know, actively trying to kill another cop who's in uniform the whole time, you know. So it's like, it's crazy. Like, these cop movies, man, they're amazing and I love them, but it's like, let's, you know what I mean? Like, just, but I love it, you know. And this one's no exception, you know, like, just super well done and well made. And, I mean, yeah, like, It just, like, that first scene just bummed me out, man. Like, it just pissed me off, because it's like, because I didn't even think about it when I went into the theater. The title, you know, like, I thought it was just, like, black and blue, like a bruise, you know what I mean? Like, this, like, she's gonna get, you know, beaten up and thrown through the ringer, and, you know, she's gonna come out bruised on the other side of it, but she's a tough lady, so she'll be okay. But no, man, it's a racial and occupational thing. And that's something that, you know, like, we need movies like this that open our eyes to these kinds of issues. Or maybe not open our eyes, but discuss these kinds of things. Because if we don't have this stuff then in our popular culture, then movies and TV become too escapist. You know what I mean? So, my hat's off to the entire team of Black and Blue for a really superb job. Just super well done. Love the movie. Okay. I need to cut it off here because if I go keep going at this rate, this is going to be a like 3 hour episodes. I'm probably going to say that again too, because I'm going to look at the clock like I just did. And anyway, okay, I'm going to shut up now. We're going to move on. Great job. Good job on Black and Blue. Loved it. Definitely would recommend it. Oh, I can already tell I'm going to repeat myself so often in this stupid episode. Anyway, okay. I'm going to take a break and try to keep my words in more and I'll be back to talk about Line of Duty, and then we'll continue on with Crown Vic and 21 Bridges to cap it off. All right, stay tuned. Don't go away. Stay tuned. All right, movie number two on our cop film marathon. We have Line of Duty. Right off the bat, I want to say this movie definitely flew way under the radar. I didn't hear anything about it or see anything about it until just randomly it appeared on my feed a week and a half or so ago. And I was like, ooh, Aaron Eckhart. I like Aaron Eckhart. Let me give it a little look-see. And watched it the other night. And I was pretty blown away. Because for one thing, I went in with pretty low expectations, just because when something, especially an action movie, flies under the radar like this, and you go on one of the sites like IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes or anything like that, and you see it has a score of 5.0, typically you're not going to get much out of the experience. This film, however, was delightfully surprising and was just absolutely phenomenal. It was really, really, really freaking good, man. Just real quick, the basic story is Aaron Eckhart plays this cop who's kind of a little bit run down after an incident a while back. And he's working patrol, just kind of walking a beat, and he kind of spends he's when we meet him, he's spending the majority of his time just kind of hanging out with this young kid from the neighborhood, just chilling on the street corner, talking basketball and whatnot. A call comes over the radio, of this guy who's involved in a kidnapping plot, and the call is "do not engage." But he hears the officer downs as this guy is trying to escape. This guy's escaping, takes out some cops, so he's like, "Well, no, I'm gonna go ahead and go after this guy," and ends up in back against the wall situation where he has to kill him. And he finds out that that's the only link they have to finding this missing girl who's been kidnapped. And then the kidnapper sends them, a link showing her in a very precarious situation. And then starting a countdown clock of 63 minutes. While this is going on, a young woman who's SJW, if you will, social warrior for justice, reporter type person, but using new media, the internet, instead of traditional forms of reporting, shows up at the scene, finds out what's going on, and sees that this guy is not going to stand down. So she proposes, "Hey, let me follow you around. I'm live streaming this whole thing right now. Let's show the people what's going down. Because I'm here to report the truth of what actually is happening. I'm not here to edit you, to take anything you say out of context. I'm here to show what's going on, good and bad, ugly and pretty. And so they embark on an epic journey to find this young girl who's been taken from her dad. So there are so many ways that they could have done this. One, you know, the most obvious being the found footage style of film, which I'm super glad they didn't do, because we would have missed a lot of stuff. And also, the found footage thing I feel like is a little bit played out, unless it's done like super duper well. You know, it's just, it's a little bit boring now, because so many people use it and they don't take the format very seriously. So it just kind of, you know, it's like anything else. You know, once somebody does it once and then three more people do it and then 10 more people do it, it's like, okay, we get it, you know. It's, yeah. So I'm really glad they didn't do that. Now, they do, you know, occasionally go to that perspective of the live stream camera, which is great, you know, because you get that, then you get just the regular Hollywood movie-making kind of stuff going on. Yeah, you know, so you get this kind of, this, you know, mixed mash of stuff going on. Where this movie really surprised me was with the action sequences. So, normally in a film like this, which, it's not super big budget, you know, one of the reasons you can tell that is they didn't shoot in a New York or a Los Angeles or, you know, a big city. They shot, you know, down, somewhere in Georgia, maybe Atlanta, but don't quote me on that. It could have been Atlanta, but I'm not 100%. But, you know, Georgia is one of the states that offers really nice tax incentives for filmmakers and stuff, as well as New Orleans and some other places. So, you know, you get a real nice break on how much money you have to, you know, pay tax-wise, so you can shoot your movie for a little bit cheaper. But what these guys did was very great, because they were so not economical, because the way that these action sequences, man, like, they don't belong, like, this movie doesn't look like a low budget movie is what I'm trying to say. You know, like, the first sequence of the movie is a 10-minute long chase sequence. 10 minutes, you know, like, not even a, like, these big, huge, you know, $50-100 million budget movies have, you know, a 10-minute sequence, much less two of them, which this movie does. Actually, more like three, you know, almost three. Like, the third big one is, like, I want to say, like, five or six, maybe eight. I'm not sure. I didn't time that one. But yeah, the two big ones are 10 minutes long, you know, the opener and then the middle one, 10-minute action sequences. So a big 10-minute chase sequence, and then smack in the middle of the movie is a big 10-minute shootout in the middle of the street in broad daylight. It's just big, ballsy filmmaking with like, no money, you know, apparently. Which is so fantastic. I mean, the way this movie was done was so damn good, you know. Aaron Eckhart killed it, you know. He plays it very, 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 very good. Like, he plays it perfectly, man. You know, like, even when they're trying to inject a little bit of light, just, you know, like, okay, it's the movie's been pretty heavy so far. Let's just have this sequence where, you know, we'll just throw a couple of laughs in there, just to, you know, spice up the drama a little bit. And, you know, there's no reason for, like, laughter from characters, but there is when you put it in the right circumstance and context. So it's like, okay, that's a little this character can get a little tongue in cheek here, which is great. So, you know, just the way that, you know, it's just so goddamn good. And Ben McKenzie, who you might know from playing Jim Gordon in the Fox TV series Gotham, is in the movie as well, and he is fantastic too. Don't want to give too much away, but he's in there, and it's awesome. Yeah, man, I really, really dug this movie, and one of the things that I think is so great about this movie and all the movies I'm talking about in this episode, and I probably said it before in the first segment, I'll probably say it again going forward, but one of the things that makes all four of these movies so good is how specific the vision of the filmmakers were. You know, there doesn't appear to be a lot of what are we going to do today kind of moments. You know, like sometimes you watch a movie and you know you're like, feels like it's getting a little bit off the rails here, guys, you know, but not with any of these films. With all four of these films, the vision of the filmmaker is very clear and defined, and you can tell right away how clear and defined that vision is within the opening moments of each of these movies, which is very rare, you know? And again, like, the fact that all, like, if you guys, like, trust me, all right, like, just watch these movies and you will see what I'm seeing. I guarantee it, all right? I guarantee it. I've never done that before, I don't think, made a guarantee like that. You may not like the movies and you may think they're crap, but the fact of the matter is that you will for a fact see how defined each of these filmmakers' visions for the story they're trying to tell is. You know, like, each of these directors was, like, it's so specific. And this movie, in particular, is probably, this one and probably 21 Bridges, well, actually, I can't even, like, rank them in terms of, like, vision specificity. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're just so well thought out and put together, you know? Again, like, you may like them, you may hate them. I don't know. But the fact is that there's no way you're going to be like, well, they clearly didn't know what they were doing. Like, you'll be like, this sucks, but this director knows exactly what they want, and they got it, but I don't like it. Like, that's, you know what I mean? So, yeah. All right. That's, I gotta try and keep it short, because this is gonna be such a long episode if I keep talking all of it. Okay. All right. Quick break, and we're gonna be back with Crown Vic, starring Thomas Jane, and following that, 21 Bridges with Chadwick Boseman. Stick around. We got a little ways to go, I think. Alrighty. Thanks for getting this far. We've got this movie and one more to go. So, you're a trooper. Hold on. Stick with me. so far we've covered, Rookie Cop with some Dirty Cops. We've covered, the cowboy, life or death, real-time stuff. Now we come to the slow burn with Crown Vic. And this movie was just really great. It wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be, but it was sublime. Like, I enjoyed it. Let's put it that way. So this one, we've got Thomas Jane and a bunch of other people you probably won't know. Because there's not a lot of names in this one. Thomas Jane's pretty much the only, like, big name that you might know who he is, because he was the Punisher. So I love Thomas Jane, because he killed it as the Punisher. I almost started talking about his movie when he played the Punisher, but another time. Anyway, like I've been saying with all these main characters on the list, they're all very similar to each other, just and also so different from one another. They're all either they are or become the kind of the cowboy, the badass, you know, and in this case, he's a has-been. So, you know, it really gives an interesting flavor to this movie. So this is what goes down, right? So, the movie opens with a bit of a gunfight between these bank robbers and the police, and the bank robbers come out ahead because they've got automatic rifles, AR-15s, and they're just lighting up the cops, you know, who just got, you know, pistols. And that is then juxtaposed with this first night on patrol for this rookie cop, whose FTO, their training officer, is Thomas Jane's character, Ray. And it's a very interesting movie because it is, while it has its, you know, more outrageous moments, if you will, of things that are maybe not necessarily realistic, it is one of the most realistic cop films in that I feel like it very accurately depicts what it's like to just be on patrol for a night, because that's what it is. It's just one patrol over the course of 12 hours and, or 8 hours, whatever. And it's just two, and for a lot of it, it's these, you know, lengthy dialogue scenes of two guys just in a car talking with each other. Now the subject matter gets pretty crazy at, you know, here and there, because it's this guy, this grizzled veteran who is genuinely trying to impart some wisdom of what it is to be on the job, but it's a very cynical worldview, you know. When I talk about stuff like The Rookie, you know, like those guys, those training officers they're all unique and different, but they're all the same in that they want their rookie to be good at their job. I mean, until Nyla comes in season two and she just starts out as just shut up, we're doing this my way. If you don't know your stuff, that's on you. It's not on me. I'm not here to be your teacher or your friend or your partner. I'm here to do my job the way I see fit, not how you want me to do it. We'll see what happens with that as we go along with the season. But, you know, but this guy, you know, he doesn't really want to be a, you know, Ray, he doesn't really want to be a training officer. He's forced into it. But if he's going to do it, he's going to do it his way too, you know, but he is going to just be very direct and like, look, you can either do the job this way or you can do the job that way. If you do the job this way, you might have a chance. If you do the job that way, you're either going to get burned out or killed, or you're going to quit. And that's it. Like, if you do the job this way, you might get to 20 in a pension. If you do it that way, you're screwed. So, it makes for a very interesting dynamic when you have this guy who is, you know, pretty idealistic. He's been a cop for 3 years, but in a more security type of a position. And finally, a patrol spot opened up and he jumped at it. So he's still a rookie, you know, like he doesn't know his ass from his elbow. In terms of, you know, going on a night patrol in Los Angeles, you know. So it makes for some very interesting conversation, but also some very interesting, you know, capers that these guys end up getting into. So it just, and the way that the movie develops is just fantastic because you keep hearing these radio calls of the two bank robber dudes killing more cops. And, you know, usually in the movies and TV, when cops get killed, it's, you know, calling all cars, officer down, you know. And I don't know if that's what's unrealistic or if this is what's unrealistic, because these guys, they keep hearing these calls over the course of the night, 2, 3 times, 4 times, and they never divert out of their patrol zone, which I think is probably more realistic, because, you know, I mean, I'm not a cop and I never have been, but I imagine that, you know, if you're on a night patrol, you probably don't have, you know, no matter what department you're with, is what I'm trying to say, you have a finite amount of resources and personnel that you can allocate to a certain area. And, you know, if you have like a handful, 2, 3, 4 cars that can patrol one zone, one area, you probably can't divert many, if any, of them to another situation in another patrol zone, unless it's, you know, like just absolutely, like it's a war zone, you know what I mean? But if it's just a hit and run gun, you know, a run and gun, you know, ambush, and you don't have eyes on the suspects, you probably can't divert from your patrol zone to go halfway across the city to this spot and leave your area unattended, you know? So it just, there's this like tension, this underlying tension that's building throughout the movie. And the way that it builds is absolutely incredible. It's very much like that analogy that Pierce Brosnan's character says in Dante's Peak, where if you put a frog in a pot of boiling water, the frog's going to jump out. But if you put the frog in, you know, some lukewarm room temperature water and then very, very slowly turn the heat up, the frog will sit there and boil to death. And that's exactly what this movie is, you know. You are the frog, and the heat is very, very slowly being turned up, and you're just sitting in it the whole time as you slowly boil to death. I'm just kidding. No, it's not. It's as close as I can get, you know what I mean? Because it's this tension that just is sitting there below the surface, and it keeps rising up more and more and more, you know, as the movie goes on. Like, each passing minute, the tension rises and rises until it becomes almost unbearable, because you're like, I know that these two cops, because it's a movie, I know that it's these two guys I've spent the whole movie with who are going to run into these two bank robbers, and there's going to be a confrontation, and it's going to be insane, whatever happens. And, you know, are you right? Are you wrong? I'm not telling you. All I can say is this movie does not do what you think it was going to do. And that, I think, was perfect, you know. Yes, would I have loved to see exactly, you know, like what I thought in my mind? Sure, but that gets boring after a while, because that happens to me all the time. You know what I mean? I was talking about this with Heath a while ago, about a story, and, you know, I was like, you know, I kind of knew where this was going to go, and I kind of know where it's going to go moving forward. There's, you know, and the reason why is because I've seen so many movies and TV shows that nobody really does anything unexpected, and it's kind of impossible to be unexpected because so many people have done so many unexpected things. And then, you know, like almost everything's been done at this point. You know what I mean? So the only thing you can really do is make it fresh and different somehow, some way. Or you just grit your teeth, bite the bullet, and do the thing that everybody thinks is going to happen. And then just make that thing awesome. You know, Heat is a great example of this. You know, it's a 3-hour movie, and the entire time it's building to an epic confrontation between the robbery homicide division and this group of professional thieves who also have, you know, tactical and military awareness and training. So, you know, when they're in the bank and that music is going, you know, and then it's just, as they're walking out the bank, the music just drops and it's quiet. And then Val Kilmer's character sees the cops across the street and he just opens up. You know that moment is coming in the movie, whether or not you've seen any advertisements or whether you read the plot description. Like, if you come into that movie completely cold and you don't know anything about it, you know that that's going to happen because, it's a 3-hour long movie. It's cops and robbers, and it's Al Pacino and Robert De Niro. So you know that there's going to be some kind of craziness that goes down, and it's going to be explosive. And that's what you get. But what the way that Michael Mann does it is this insane 10-minute sequence, you know, that's still to this day regarded as one of the greatest shootouts in film history, for good reason. And that's what I love about this movie, Crown Vic, is a quintessential cop movie that does things differently than you would think, you know? I mean, you know, like, thinking about these four movies makes me think about so many other great cop films, you know, like Heat or like Street Kings or End of Watch and stuff like that. And another thing that all these movies have in common is the filmmaker. And each one of these four filmmakers and each of these four scripts all have a very specific story that they're trying to tell, and the director comes in and they have a very specific vision for how they want the film to go. And that's really rare. And the fact that all four of these movies share that common trait is even rarer. And the fact that all four of these movies are the same type of movie, which is a cop action thriller drama that all takes place in a 24-hour span of time, is the rarest I've ever seen. And then the fact that they've all come out either in theaters or on digital within about a month's time is astronomically improbable. You know what I'm saying? Like, I cannot think of a single time in the history of film where this many movies that have the same basic premise. We're going to do a cop movie. It's going to take place in X amount of time, no longer than 24 hours. And we're going to spend the entire movie pretty much with this cop or these cops, and only cut away maybe once or twice or three times, just, you know, here or there. And that's it. I've never seen this before. It's insane. You know, but it's absolutely incredible, and it's kind of joyous in a way, because, you know, I was thinking, oh, Line of Duty and Crown Vic, that'd make a great double feature. But now it's Black and Blue, Line of Duty, Crown Vic, and 21 Bridges make a great marathon. So, pretty interesting stuff going on. So yeah, definitely recommend this one, because it's pretty great. It's pretty damn great. Like, if you were gonna do double feature night, I would go Black and Blue and then Crown Vic, and then pair Line of Duty with 21 Bridges, just because Black and Blue is also like a little bit more drama thriller oriented than Line of Duty. Line of Duty is more the straight up action movie, as I said. You know, the pulse pounding, constant, you know, movement kind of a movie, like 21 Bridges is, as you will hear me discuss in a minute. Whereas Black and Blue and this movie Crown Vic, there's more of the slow burn coming to the end kind of thing, like it's a fuse that is lit and burning until its inevitable explosive conclusion. So that's my recommendation. Otherwise, I would go marathon, do a marathon night, and I would actually do it probably in the order that this episode goes. So Black and Blue for, you know, your slow burn jolt of energy. Then Line of Duty to get you really pumped up, Crown Vic to kind of bring you back down a little bit, and then and just slow it down, you know, breathe, and then 21 Bridges to really kick it into overdrive. So that's how I would do it. And that's how I will do it once all these movies are available for me to watch at home. So, yeah, dude. Great movie all around. Very different from your normal cop movie, but I like that. You know, I like when guys do some stuff that's different. So, anyway, I gotta shut up, man. I've been talking for so long. I better do 21 Bridges in like 10 minutes. Otherwise, I feel like you guys are going to hate me. Because I'm talking so much. But anyway. yeah. So, quick break, and we'll be back to complete the Cops edition of Jim Goes to the Movies and Movies Come to Jim with 21 Bridges. Stay tuned. All right, now we come to the end of this epic episode of cop movies. I think it went pretty well. So here we are at the last film, 21 Bridges. Just saw it today, the day before Thanksgiving. Been super excited about it, couldn't wait for it, and I was not in the least disappointed. All right. So, this one, 21 Bridges, again, cop film, takes place over the course of, you know, in a 24-hour period, as we've been discussing, and I just really like how this came together, like, because, you know, Black and Blue came out, a month or so ago, and then these other two movies, Line of Duty and Crown Vic, were just recently released on digital, within the last week or two. And 21 Bridges just came out last week. This all just kind of came together, which is really cool. I'm sorry. It's serendipitous because, these four movies, you know, as I've said, all share this trait of taking place within a 24-hour period, some much shorter. And it just kind of, fell in my lap, you know? So it's like, this is, the most themed of an episode of Jim Goes to the Movies that there's ever been, and it's really cool. Anyway, all right, I gotta shut up because I've been talking for a long time. 21 Bridges, it's the new cop action thriller with Chadwick Boseman, Sienna Miller, J.K. Simmons, and even got a little Keith David in the mix, which is pretty toit, and Taylor Kitsch. 21 Bridges. All right, so this one, we have Chadwick Boseman's character, who lost his father, who is also a police officer, at a very young age. And his dad was, you know, a pretty badass cop, from what you gather, and died in the line of duty when he got into an altercation with three guys, and in the process took two of them out, but the third one punched his ticket, unfortunately. Andre, Chadwick Boseman's character, grew up kind of and became this kind of avenging angel, if you will, of fallen cops. So in the 10 years he's been on the force, you learn he's killed 8 guys, and presumably most, if not all of them, were cop killers as well. So he has a reputation on the force, or the police service, as a trigger puller, and as do all these cops, with the exception of the character from Black and Blue. But it's kind of her anyway. Yeah, I already talked about that. I don't need to talk about it more. But all these cops either are or become trigger pullers over the course of these films. And Chadwick, though, is probably the most hardcore because, like I said, he's got a reputation for being a cop killer. So, when he gets brought in on this job where these two dudes ripped off some coke, a lot of cocaine, from this stash point, he's brought in to find these guys who killed 8 cops in one shot. You know, not one shot, like one bullet, like one go. So these 4 cops show up. The bad dudes ambush them. 4 more respond to the shots fired call, and they take them out too. They're on the run, and they find themselves in Manhattan. And Andre, once he learns this information, has the island of Manhattan shut down. So the 21 bridges, the 4 tunnels, the 3 rivers, all the train services stopped, subway gets looped, just complete lockdown of Manhattan, and he's got 5 hours to scour the island and bring these guys to justice. What's interesting, though, about this particular character, as with all these characters, is that they have a very definitive and defined moral code and are not willing to bend or break it, which is pretty interesting, especially with cop films of this nature, where, you know, all these characters are so diverse and interesting, but they all do share that character trait of, I have my code, and I'm going to follow it. I'm not going to break it. You know, I'm not going to, you know, step over what my lines are. And all of them have different lines that they're willing, like where the boundary is, like what they are willing to do, and where the line is that if they cross this line, then that's too far for them. And with Andre, it's very clear, you know, he wants to bring these guys to justice, but he's going to do it his way, and he's going to do it right. And if he has the opportunity, he's going to bring him in alive. The only reason he's killed so many people is because they've tried to kill him, you know. So, again, very definitive moral compass and set boundaries, you know. Obviously, with all these characters, the boundaries are a little bit further than what your regular street cop probably would have, you know, and more contained than, you know, certain cops that we've talked about in these films have, because we've talked about, you know, some bad cops, some dirty cops, some crazy cops. So we've really run the gamut in this episode, and, you know, this film is no different. Got all kinds. You know, you've got the guys that are just trying to do the job, then you've got these guys who, you know, are just out for blood because, you know, I don't know exactly how realistic it is in terms of real life policing, but movies and TV have almost exclusively portrayed the loss of an officer on duty, especially on duty, as time for vengeance, you know. And I mean everything, you know, like even Blue Bloods, that's so, like, you know, these guys are, you know, the Reagan family, you know, even they have this episode where they deal with officers down. And the first reaction of them is, you know, every cop in the city is going to want to kill these guys. We don't want to do that. We want to bring them to justice, put them in jail, and have them locked up for the rest of their lives. In the universe of this film, you know, that is maybe not going to happen. Because you have Andre, who, as I said, is a cop killer killer, you know. So immediately, as the audience, and also as the other characters, the other police officers around Andre, are like, oh, this guy's going to go out, he's going to hunt him down, and he's going to blow their brains out. It's all good. But the thing about Andre, and what makes him so much more interesting than just a trigger puller, is that he's not just trying to hammer nails, you know? He's a thoughtful, very smart and very clever detective who wants to uncover what the truth is of a thing, as opposed to just hammering nails, you know. So he goes out and he's trying to find out the truth of the matter. And that provides this very thrilling, very enthralling sort of story that really these two cop killers kind of they're the main objective, but they open a door, a can of worms, into something much darker and greater. So it just becomes this thrill ride of, you know, incredible action sequences and uncovering secrets. And obviously, I'm not going to do spoilers because I abhor doing spoilers for people because it's like ruins stuff, you know. Suffice it to say, this movie kicked ass. You know, Chadwick Boseman is always a win. Sienna Miller, always a win. J.K. Simmons, Keith David, Taylor Kitsch, always a win. Taylor Kitsch is interesting. He's kind of fallen into this niche, and he's kind of being typecast, but I think it's one of the best typecasts ever to come across, and that is he is being typecast as an operator, as a trigger puller, good and bad. You know, you got Lone Survivor as Captain Michael Murphy, which was an incredible performance that I discussed last year on the podcast. You know, you've got American Assassin a couple of years ago, which was really great, and you got this. You could kind of throw Battleship in there because, you know, he doesn't start out as like the captain of the ship or whatever, but you know. He spends a little bit more time in command of the ship as opposed to running around with an M4, which he does do, though, so still kind of qualifies. But, like, that's just, like, an awesome way to be typecast, you know? There are a few other guys that have had that happen, like James Badge Dale, kind of, and Max Martini. Max Martini, you might not know the name, but you've probably seen his face because he's been in so much stuff, you know? From 24 as a SWAT team leader to, you know, Oz in 13 Hours, Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. And it's just a really cool archetype of typecasting that has come about in the last few years where it's like, you know, you get these guys, they have the look, and they've gone through the training two or three times, and they just keep getting these roles where, you know, they're operators of one form or another. And it's so cool. Like, if that was, like, the, you know, the thing that happened to me as an actor, just like, we just want you to be an operator, man. I'd be like, okay, sign me up. Give me my gun, let's go shoot some stuff. You know what I mean? Like, because that is, like, because normally typecasting, you know, sucks because it's like, I'm doing the same thing over and over. The nice thing about being typecast as an operator is you can be a bad guy or a good guy, you know, and you can have a lot more complex emotional character arcs than any other kind of typecasting, really. You know, if you keep getting typecast as the pedophile or the rapist, you're not really going to go anywhere as an actor, like, in terms of performances, or really anywhere in your career, for good reason, you know what I mean? Like, there's not, we don't want to humanize anybody like that, even though, you know, yeah, nah, we don't, we really don't care. Like, just shoot him in the face and be done with it. But operators, you know, there's so much to mine there and to invest in as an audience member, and mine as an actor. You know, because you can just be the mute thug that you know, shoots up a nightclub or whatever and kills 39 people, and then, you know, gets in a firefight with the cops and takes out four of them, and then, you know, runs into these drug dealers and you kill all those guys, and so you're just the mute thug just killing and killing and killing. Or it can, and that's, you know, the lower end of the spectrum. Or you go all the way to the other side where it's like you get stuff like, you know, 13 Hours or Lone Survivor, where, you know, or SEAL Team or SWAT, good examples. Plugging my own show again. Where it's good guys, but also, you know, sometimes it can be in the middle somewhere in terms of good and bad. And then, you know, you have this, like, kind of morally ambiguous sort of thing going on where it's like, am I a good guy? Am I a bad guy? You know, like, what am I? You know what I mean? So that's just that's just something really interesting that, you know, Taylor Kitsch is kind of was one of these guys who's kind of stumbled into it. And it's just really nice because I always like seeing him as an operator of one kind or another. So just really, really great movie overall. You know, I cannot wait to see it again. It was so much fun watching it. And it was just super well made, you know. Like, the director, Brian Kirk, did a fantastic job. The script was great. The cinematography was so on point. You know, I mean, the camera work in this movie was really, really good. The music was tight as all hell. And, of course, you've got Anthony and Joe Russo of the MCU producing it. So, it's got all the... this movie had everything it needed. You know what I mean? To succeed, and it definitely did, at least in my eyes, you know. We'll see what happens, whether or not it's also a critical and commercial success with everybody, which I genuinely hope it is, because I thought it was just a fantastic film. Probably my favorite one on this list, which is why I saved the best for last. But yeah, dude, just so damn good. Like, Chadwick Boseman just is killing it, man. Like, his career is insane, is it not? I mean, this guy just came out of nowhere. Like, this guy was doing guest stars on Castle and stuff, and now he's played some of the most iconic roles and iconic people in history. I mean, Thurgood Marshall, James Brown, Jackie Robinson, who's been a hero of mine since I was a little kid, you know what I mean? And then he's Black Panther now, you know? And then I think this role may not necessarily be iconic, but I think it has the potential to be, as the film grows, as the film ages over time. As, you know, because I've never seen really a movie like this about a character like this where it's a cop who has a reputation for being the guy you call when a bunch of cops get killed. You know, I can't think of a character like that before. So that's really cool. And, you know, I know this movie is probably just a standaloner, but I would not mind at least two more sequels. You know what I mean? Just do a nice little trilogy of it. That'd be pretty cool. Because as you find out through the movie, he's so much more than what his reputation is, which is just the guy you call when cops get killed. He's so much more than that. So I feel like there's a lot more to explore with this character, and I would really love to see that. Because Chadwick Boseman just played it to perfection. Just killed it. So yeah, there you have it. Jim Goes to the Movies and Movies Come to Jim, Cops Edition. That's going to do it. That's our show for tonight. Thank you so much for listening. I really do appreciate it, you know. Yeah, man. Just, I love you guys. It's awesome, you know. Putting out some holiday cheer for everybody. I love you guys. Happy Thanksgiving. Have a great holiday season. We will be back for sure with more Jim Goes to the Movies, because there are so many good movies coming out right now, guys. It's crazy. And yeah, man, just great stuff. Great stuff all around. So yeah, thanks again for listening. Please check out the Morning Mangami podcast with host Heath LaBombard. If you like this, you'll definitely like that. Check out our other social media stuff we got going on. We've got our YouTube page with video game streams and Jim versus Heath video game streams. All kinds of cool stuff. Our Instagram, Check it all out, man, at Mogami Players across all the different social media. Thank you so much for stopping by for a nightcap. Have yourself a lovely holiday season. And good night, good day, good luck.
The Nightcap with Jim podcast is a Mogami production, hosted by James Smith, produced by Heath LeBombard and James Smith. For more Mogami content, visit Mogami Players all across the social medias.